This is KBOO. In October, Southminster Presbyterian Church in Beaverton held a series of housing justice forums. On Tuesday, October 11th, Chloe Udaly and Margot Black made a presentation regarding the housing and rental crisis in the city of Portland, as well as the larger Portland metro. The title of the presentation is, What is it like to be on the front lines of housing justice? At the time of the forum, Chloe Udaly was running for Portland City Council. She was elected to that position on November 8th. She is a housing justice activist who, through her online discussion group, The Shed, interacts daily with people who suffer from the metro's housing crisis. Margot Black is one of the founders of Portland Tenants United. Its current campaign hashtag, KeepPDXHoused, is focused on achieving rent stabilization and a moratorium on no-cause evictions. The presentation begins with Chloe Udaly introducing herself.
I was born and raised in the Portland metro area. I actually spent my childhood in Gales Creek, which is out past Forest Grove, and my youth in Sherwood. And I have lived in Portland continuously since 1988. I wanted to make it clear that I'm not actually 28 years old. I'm 46. So, yes. I moved to Portland at age 18. Portland was an affordable place to live. It was attractive to a lot of creative people, myself included. And that affordability allowed me to open a small business at the age of 24, to launch a literary nonprofit 4 years later, to raise my family, all on a modest income. I really was able to make a good life for myself and feel relatively secure until my 92-year-old landlords decided to sell the house that I'd lived in for 18 years, and I was thrust into the open rental market for the first time in my adult life. And it was a rude awakening, because that was 2007. It was on the cusp of our recession, and rents had gone up quite a bit since I had moved into that house 18 years ago. The first house I moved into after my lease was up, my landlords raised my rent 50%, so it went from $1,200 a month to $1,800 a month. And I had to move a second time. And I lived in the house that I live in now, which is a very modest little two-bedroom house, relatively substandard, lots of issues with the home and deferred maintenance. But I was happy there because it was relatively affordable and my landlords left me alone and they weren't raising my rent until 4 years ago. And as I started getting these annual rent increases, I began to struggle with housing costs. And for the first couple years, I really internalized that struggle. I felt like it was my own personal challenge to keep up and my own personal failure if I couldn't keep up with it. Then I got a 35% rent increase about 3 years ago, which really was life-changing, not in a good way, because it put me into this category of cost burden renters. And I began to have to make choices about whether I would get health care or whether I would pay my student loans. I mean, I'm a single mom now with a kid with a significant disability, so keeping a roof over our heads is my number one priority. We would not last long on the streets or living in a tent. My son requires electricity to live, and it was about 18 months ago now, I guess. I found an ad on Craigslist looking for affordable housing. And the the little subtitle you see said, Tiny Home in the Heart of Hawthorne, $950. And I don't know what possessed me to click on it, because I can't fit into a tiny home. And I certainly wouldn't want to pay $950, but I clicked through, and what I saw was a dwelling. It wasn't a house, exactly. It was a small dwelling, 165 square feet. It was one room, and it had the bathroom facilities directly across from the kitchenette. And I thought, wow, if this is the new reality of renting in Portland, I'm in serious trouble. I posted on Facebook, and it, got a lot of likes and comments and shares, and a friend of mine said, that's a shed. She used an expletive, which I'm going to leave out of this talk, but she said, that's a shed, essentially, and I Google image searched and realized that is a shed. It's a shed. It was a prefab shed that someone bought at Home Depot and marginally wired and plumbed and sheetrocked and plopped in their backyard illegally and was offering it as a housing. I always forget to mention it wasn't just $950. It was $950 plus an undisclosed amount of labor helping the landlord organize her house. Yes, otherwise it was $1,250. So due to the response to that single Facebook post, I decided to create this Facebook group called That's a Shed, or The Shed now. And you know, we had fun posting the most ridiculous Craigslist ads we could find, and then making up our own sheds, which were all $950 in the heart of Hawthorne, and they were beehives and birdhouses and coffins and empty chairs on the side of the road. But then people started sharing their personal stories, and it really took a turn from something fairly humorous and irreverent to something much more serious. And that's how I met Margot, I believe, either through that group or the group that she had started around the same time, maybe a little earlier. And it really has become an online community, a clearinghouse for information and resources, a support group, and a springboard for organizing and activism. And it was within that group that people started encouraging me to run for city council, which I just thought was preposterous because I'm just a bookseller and I'm just a mom and, you know, I don't have the right experience or background, or so I thought, for running for city council. And then finally a couple people set me straight, so I did. So that is what brought me here. I've been involved in different social, economic, and environmental justice issues since the first Gulf War. And after my son was born, that set me on a path of disability advocacy, which certainly intersects with housing. As our kids get older, thinking about how they're going to move out into the community and achieve some level of independence. But it really was my own personal experience in this last 2 years that has driven me towards this fairly single focus right now, because housing is a basic need and it's a human right, and few things are more important than a safe, stable, affordable place to live. I'm going to turn it over to Margot, but I'm interested to hear your questions, and I'm especially interested to hear about the housing crisis in Beaverton, because I know what's happening in Portland is having a ripple effect out into the suburbs and beyond. I just read a story about a woman in Forest Grove, which is where, near, you know, the closest actual town to where I lived as a child, who's struggling to find a place to rent for $1,600, which is unbelievable to me. What is going on in Forest Grove that people would want to spend $1,600? Anyhow, thank you for your time, and I'm going to turn it over to Margot.
This is KBOO. You're listening to a forum on housing justice entitled, What is it like to be on the front lines of housing justice? This presentation was held at Southminster Presbyterian Church in Beaverton. Margot Black of Portland Tenants United is speaking.
Hi, everyone. My name is Margot Black. So first of all, I just want to really thank you all for having a housing justice forum. Tonight, I want to thank everybody for coming tonight. I mean, it's just so heartening to see people having these conversations. And the community is starting to show up and listen to the stories and think about the way to plug in, because I, you know, my story is not too dissimilar from Chloe's, and I can say this time last year, we were not seeing the influx in housing justice forums that we are seeing now, and it really feels good to see the dial moving. I'm a transplant from Salt Lake City, Utah, from 20 years ago, and I moved here, 20 years ago, as a teenager, as very soon to be pregnant, single teen mom. And it was shortly after becoming a teen mother and months after losing my grandmother who had raised me, so then you know, I now had no family support, that I got my first no-cause eviction. And I was just given 30 days notice to move out of my apartment complex. I was paying the rent, I was a good tenant, I knew my neighbors, I didn't have any, you know, my unit was in good condition, and I just remember being so confused and bewildered and really stunned, like what does this mean? This, I'm being evicted? Like what, you know, does that mean I can never get housing again? Is this on my record forever? They're like, no, it's without cause, it's not on your record, but you have to move, you have 30 days. I'm like, but why? And they're like, we don't have to tell you. No, but really, really, like why? None of my neighbors are moving. I mean, why are you asking me to move? And because I have a little bit more time here to flesh out the story, I will tell you that when I pressed my on-site property managers, they thought that a coworker who had dropped me off at work was my boyfriend, and they thought that that lifestyle was unsavory, and they wanted me to move. And first of all, he wasn't my boyfriend, but that doesn't matter. That is a discriminatory reason to have someone move. And to take a single teen, now orphaned mother, and tell her that she has 30 days to find a new place to live, was beyond traumatizing. I mean, to the fact that I still remember where I was standing in my living room 20 years ago to read that notice. And I still remember the look on my property manager's face as he embarrassed, you know, sort of shamefully conceded the reason. And I remember the absolute trauma and destabilization of having to, I didn't have a car, of having to move into deep into Hillsboro, where the Max had not quite come online. I was waiting tables at Red Robin. I had to take taxi cabs to work. I lost my job after the third time that I was more than 5 minutes late. And then the cycle of poverty is there. I'm on the express train on the cycle of poverty. And it was only because I had a friend who, from the Unitarian Church, which is what I was raised in Salt Lake City, who'd moved to Portland at the same time, who this is just luck and generosity, said, come live with me, get on your feet, you don't have to pay rent. And he let me stay there for 4 years, rent-free, and I was able to get on my feet, and I was able to go to college, and I was able to right my ship. And it, to me, that is, it shows the transformative experience of having safe, stable, affordable housing for people who are vulnerable. And I shudder to think about where my daughter just started college at PSU last week. I shudder to think where my daughter and I would have ended up had we, you know, by the time I moved in with my friend, we were, rent was $650 and I could barely make it. Fast forward a number of years, I got married, I had more kids, I got a master's degree, and we rented this lovely home in Maplewood for more money, again, than we ever thought we'd pay on rent in our lives. But we thought, you know, we finally done it. We did all the things I told us to do, and we're gonna save for a couple of years, and we're gonna buy a house, and like, we can finally just relax. And the owner who had said, you know, she might sell us this house, she was moving to New York to, you know, get comfortable, gave us a 30-day no-cause notice after a verbal agreement to renew our lease, but then she changed her mind because her daughter dropped out of law school and needed the house. And she even told me, you know, I know I should have rented my daughter a house. I mean, she doesn't need 3,000 square feet, but God, it's just so hard to find an apartment. Tell me about it. I have 3 children and a dog and a cat, and I have 30 days to try to find a place where I don't have to change schools and can still drive to work. And I was so, I mean, I just couldn't believe it. And I was like, wow, how is this happening to me again? And this is, you know, this is tough. This is not a discriminatory eviction. This is an owner wanting to turn her home over to her daughter. But I thought, you know, we had to put our lives on hold. You know, we were wiped out financially from the unexpected move, and, you know, we had to put up, I don't know, $2,500 in a security deposit. We had to pay double rent for the 2-week overlap in the two homes, which was another $1,000. I had a toddler underfoot, and I had to pay childcare to, you know, keep him at bay while we packed and moved again. And it was just this financially catastrophic thing, and I was like, why is this still happening? Why? And as I just started to fixate on this, because I was so angry and I felt so powerless, and I wrote all my representatives, and they said, yeah, sorry, them's the breaks. I just thought, it was like, who's working on this issue? And And then I was in all these parenting groups on Facebook, and I started to see more and more and more moms that were just me 20 years ago, single young moms, or even married moms who had been priced out of their place, or who were terrified of their landlord, or who got a no-cause eviction. And the desperation was so palpable in their stories about not being able to find a place to go, and not being able to afford to pay their rent, and just, you know, why is this happening to me? I am just trying to catch a break. And after a while, I started this Facebook group called PDX Renters Unite. And I started about the same time Chloe started the Shed. And I just thought, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm just starting this Facebook group. You know, renters come, and at least we can commiserate, and maybe we can mobilize. You know, maybe we can start talking about what change looks like. I don't have an organizer background, you know, at all. But I just thought, you know, if enough of us are here on Facebook telling these stories, somebody's going to want to meet in person and do something about it. Someone's going to know how change happens. And that's basically what happened. It was, you know, about a year where people were like, what are we going to do about it? And the stories just kept coming, and the people just kept coming. And we would just see, I would basically memorize landlord-tenant law. And I would see questions of one or two types. You know, can my landlord do this awful thing, you know, threaten, harass, intimidate me, not fix things, raise my rent, whatever it is, you know, and the answer would either be, yes, they can. I'm really sorry that that's the law. And to, you know, to change it requires getting politicians to care about renters. Or no, it's illegal, which would be great news if there was any way to cure it besides hiring a lawyer and going to court. There is no hotline you can call and say, hey, my landlord's breaking the law, and they'll be like, oh, great, just give us his name and we'll send him a letter and a fine. You actually have to take your landlord to court for anything at all. For any, you know, an illegal notice and, you know, not repairing things, discriminating against you, whatever it is, you have to hire a lawyer and go to court. And I've talked to lawyers on the phone and said, so if my landlord says, you know, you're evicted because, you know, we don't like your boyfriend, you'd be like, that's totally discrimination, but I would never take it to court. It's impossible to prove. And I was like, what if I would pay you? He's like, I don't want to take your money for us to lose. I mean, that's the reality of the situation here. Even the rights we have, we can't defend, and it's awful. So we started meeting, and we formed a group called Portland Tenants United. And this was just a little over a year ago, last June or July. What we're looking, you know, what we are doing is forming a metro area tenants union that will function in much the same way a labor union does. And our leverage, rather than our labor, is our rent. And so as our ranks grow, if we can't make changes on the policy level, then, you know, we can mobilize for a rent strike to make those changes. But in the meantime, we're organizing tenants in their buildings, their neighborhoods, their communities, at least to just get to know each other and know that they're not alone. You know, Chloe mentioned that when she, the first time she felt like she couldn't afford a rent, it was this internalized failure. And I know that I felt that way too. You know, just like I have done something wrong, I should have made better choices in life and bought a home sooner. And I can't tell you how many people feel like it's their fault that they are going through this. So we reject the fact that to be a renter means that you have done something wrong and you suck and you deserve it. And what that means is that we need rent control. You know, rent control exists in cities where there are high populations of renters and where homeownership is not a thing that everybody does. So that is really kind of what keeps us at the table together, is this belief that housing, dignity, and security and affordability really is a human right for everyone, not just for homeowners. And we are kind of trying to, you know, make change in two ways, and one of them is through working with policymakers. And one of them is through this union building, and we use direct action in both of those realms, really to educate and agitate and call attention to the issue, and also to say, look, if you don't like direct action, if you think it's disruptive, you know, think about the disruption of being priced out of your home. Think about the disruption of a forced move, and really there are no other avenues for us to affect change because there is no agency that is monitoring landlords, and so direct action is really our only microphone. Our city campaign right now is called Keep Portland Housed. So there's a little pamphlet out in the lobby for you that has information about Portland Tenants United. But the Keep Portland Housed campaign is really two-pronged. First of all, do we all know that rent control is banned at the state level? There is an emergency provision, however, in this statute that says that local jurisdictions, so the state has said only state can do rent control and cities can't, but there's an emergency clause that says local jurisdictions can pass a rent control ordinance when we have a natural or man-made disaster that results in significant material elimination of rental housing. And when I saw that last year, I was like, bingo, why aren't we doing that? And the city is just really, really, really resistant. They really don't want it. They're very scared of rent control. Rent control, by the way, necessarily comes with eviction protections, and it necessarily sort of creates a climate where tenants can have better rights. That's where we kind of start at rent control. So our campaign says you need to use that emergency measure right now. Press pause. Press pause to give renters the relief that they need so that they can come home from work and not fear the note on the door that is either an eviction notice or an effective eviction notice by a rent increase. And what that pause button does is it brings stakeholders to the table to work out a sustainable solution. Right now, the landlord lobby can put all their money and time down in Salem because they know the cities feel like they can't do anything. And if we have a pause button, they have to come to the table and say, wait, we want to raise the rent. What do you need us to do? And what we want them to do is enact a tenant's bill of rights. And our tenant's bill of rights is three pieces: right to rent, right to recourse, and right to remain. The right to recourse basically creates an Office of Landlord-Tenant Affairs, where if there are grievances, a tenant can call and they'll actually care that the landlord is breaking the rules and do something about it, so you don't have to hire the lawyer, right? The right to remain is a just cause eviction ordinance. That means that you cannot be displaced from your home for no reason. You have to have a reason. And when that reason is something like the owner selling their home or moving their daughter in or whatever, that would be a no-fault termination. And a tenant would have some relocation assistance for that. Right now we have a building full of tenants out in Southeast Portland. This flyer's out there as well. They all got $400 rent increases. The choice between a $400 rent increase or to move. They all have to move because they can't afford the rent increase, but they also cannot afford to move. And so what this flyer is telling you is that they're withholding 2 months' rent, basically a little mini rent strike, and using that money to move so that they actually can get into new housing. Because we need it, right? Moving is expensive. And so our relocation is we're asking for 3 months' rent and full and immediate return of the security deposit when a tenant is displaced through no fault of their own. And then probably the most important piece for me of the Tenants' Bill of Rights is the right to rent. And that recognizes the fact that for people to get into housing, they have to fill out applications. Those applications are about $50 a piece. And there is no first-come, first-serve policy in Oregon. So a landlord can collect 100 applications if they want. They can collect 1,000 applications if they want. We've met landlords who keep vacant units simply to collect application fees. And that is how they make their rent, their money. Okay? And there's no law against that. Right? But let's say that we have a landlord who is choosing between, you know, a single white couple with no kids and an African American single mother with three kids. Even if they can both get in, they can both afford it. Who's the landlord going to pick every single time? So we want a standardized rental application, standardized screening criteria, and an unbiased mechanism for selection so that people of color aren't discriminated against, so that people with disabilities, with people who with transportation issues, people with, you know, who work odd hours aren't penalized for not being, you know, the first person to get there and apply. When there is a first-come, first-serve policy, and just can't be inadvertently discriminated against in other ways. So we really feel like it's so important that for people who want to get into housing, those systematic barriers that are preventing them from getting to housing are broken down.
You are listening to KBOO. On October 11th, Southminster Presbyterian Church in Beaverton held a forum entitled, What Is It Like to Be on the Front Lines of Housing Justice? You just heard Margot Black, one of the founders of Portland Tenants United. Now, Chloe Udaly, who has just been elected to the Portland City Council, is speaking.
So, a little part of our shared story, which neither of us touched on, and I want to highlight because it's not all doom and gloom, is that last year when we started talking to our elected representatives, whether that was at City Hall or in Salem, we got the message from them, this is not a priority. This is not an issue that is going to be talked about in the short session. This is not doable. And then about a year ago, the city of Portland declared their housing state of emergency. We certainly didn't get the kinds of protections that we were hoping for, but we did get extensions on no-cause evictions and rent increases over 5% from 30 to 90 days. And as Margot eloquently puts, that's like hitting the snooze button. It gives people 90 days to pay rent that they can't afford or 90 days to be displaced from their home. But it is a little bit of progress. And then before the short session, Alyssa Kenny Geyer from Southeast Portland and Rob Nose, who I think he's Southeast, called an emergency housing forum out at ERCO, and I gave invited testimony there. And by the end of my story, which I didn't really go deeply into my story, half the people sitting up there were crying. I mean, I should be a poster child for what's great about our city. And in the last few years, I've really turned into a case study of what's going wrong. Then the legislature convenes for the short session. And in fact, there was a bill for tenants' rights, a bill for mandatory inclusionary zoning, which is also was also illegal in Oregon. We were one of two states that outlawed that, Texas being the other one, which I think is never a good sign. So I've never seen this kind of level of engagement in the city around any single issue, really, and the number of people standing up to talk about it. So that's heartening, and we just need to keep the momentum going. And I'm also calling for the emergency rent freeze and kind of challenging the city to consider, you know, weigh the costs of potentially being sued with the costs of, and I always like to throw these numbers out, half of our city are renters, so that's 300,000 people. Half of them, half of those renters spend over 30% or more on housing, 30% or more of their income on housing, and half of those renters, so about 75,000 people, spend over 50% of their income on housing. And that is devastating to those families and their communities and the local economy. So it's very costly. And it's also extremely costly to serve people once they become homeless. This is another thing I like to tell people, because some people have a very negative view of homeless people. I pay my taxes, I work hard, why should those people, you know, benefit from my hard work? Well, we're spending 3 to 5 times more on serving them when they're homeless than we would serving them in supported affordable housing. So strictly, you know, looking at it from strictly a financial perspective, it just makes sense to house people. So.
You just heard Chloe Udaly and Margot Black speak at a forum on housing justice at Southminster Presbyterian Church in Beaverton, Oregon. The forum was held on October 11th. This is KBOO.